Today on Straight Talk Africa, the urgent need for land reform on the continent. Despite the end of colonial rule and apartheid in South Africa, land in Namibia, South Africa, and Zimbabwe is not equitably distributed. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, March 18th. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about land reform policies in Africa and the need to address the historical colonial and apartheid inequities in ownership.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic, so comments from emails, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, land reform and governance issues are among the most difficult and controversial on the continent. In South Africa, more than two decades following the end of apartheid, the nation's white minority still owns most of the land. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
When South Africa's Nelson Mandela came to power in 1994, 87% of the nation's land was owned by whites, who were only 10% of the population. Addressing the imbalance was a top priority of the government then, and it remains so now. Only a small amount of land has changed hands since 1994. The so-called willing seller, willing buyer land reform policy adopted by current President Jacob Zuma has been unsuccessful. And by the government's own account, at least 50% of South Africa's land reform projects have failed. The ruling African National Congress Party is under renewed pressure to accelerate land ownership reforms. Right. Author and law professor Bernadette Atuheni.
What I believe is happening is that the process is still low, number one, because the proper amount of money isn't being given to the land restitution program and land reform more generally. The process is going so slow because of lots of administrative hurdles. You wouldn't believe it, but the Land Restitution Act is the first act passed by the post-apartheid government, symbolizing its importance to the new democracy. But there has been no systematic training for commission officials. And so you have a lot of bureaucratic incapacity, right? Lack of capacity to implement the program. So there's lots of hurdles that are standing in the way.
In her book, We Want What's Ours, she says even more important for black South Africans than the restoration of land is the restoration of dignity.
But there's certain instances where I take something from you as part of a larger strategy of dehumanization or infantilization, right? And in that instance, just giving you the thing back is not enough because I took more than a thing from you. I robbed you of not only your dignity, your property, but also your dignity.
She calls it dignity taking, adding mere reparations are not enough of a remedy. Land governorship and ownership is no less an issue in Zimbabwe, where President Robert Mugabe has been in power since 1980. The Mugabe-supported seizure of lands from white farmers in 2000 is seen as a key factor to Zimbabwe's subsequent economic decline. Critics say the confiscated lands wound up in the hands of Mugabe's political allies and beneficiaries, who were not given the training or the equipment to be productive farmers. That, critics said, led to an economic decline that President Mugabe blames on colonialization, drought, and economic sanctions imposed by the West. Today, some experts, like agricultural researcher Dr. Prasper Matondi, are praising Zimbabwe's partial economic comeback and land reform efforts.
In terms of land allocation, it has been a major success. Probably it's one of the few land reform programs in the world that over a period of time has moved so many people into commercial production.
Most farms in Zimbabwe are now black owned. There are now only a handful of white farmers left, and some of their farms have been designated for redistribution. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios is our distinguished guest, Bernadette Atuheni, a law professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Chicago-Kent College of Law. Professor Atuheni has worked as a consultant for the World Bank and the South African Land Claims Commission. She is the author of a new book entitled We Want What's Ours, Learning from South Africa's Land Restitution Program. She also directed and produced a short documentary film, Sifuna Okwetu, which complements her book. It focuses on a South African family's struggle to regain their land. Well, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa, Professor.
Shaka, thank you so much for this kind invitation.
You're most welcome. And Annabel Hughes, the former executive director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Trust, a nonpartisan pro-democracy group set up to campaign internationally for the rights of Zimbabweans. She joins us via a telephone link-up from Livingston in Zambia. Good evening, Annabel.
Hi, Shaka. Nice to be back.
Well, it's a pleasure, of course, to host you again on Straight Talk Africa, and especially this time around from Africa.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. Yes, country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. You wrote arguably what is considered to be a landmark type of book, really. What particularly inspired you to do that?
Well, I graduated from Yale Law School in 2002, and right after law school, I went to clerk on the Constitutional Court of South Africa. And when I was clerking on the court, at that point in my life, I had traveled, done significant amount of work in Latin America and had traveled significantly, but the level of inequality I saw in South Africa was still just shocking. And to know that that inequality was a result of systematic land theft during colonialism and apartheid, it was just an injustice that got under my skin. And so I've spent the last 10 years researching, writing law review articles, and most recently just writing the book about land reform in South Africa.
You talk about land restitution. What exactly does it mean in layperson's language?
Well, land restitution is part of land reform, and land reform has three prongs in South Africa. The first prong is called land redistribution, and that's basically giving people land not based on what their ancestors owned in the past, but based on their present need or their ability to use the land. The second prong of land reform is called land tenure reform, and that's basically many blacks were not allowed to be owners during apartheid and colonialism, so that's a process of upgrading them from tenants to owners. The third and final prong is, in fact, land restitution, and that's found in section 25.7 of the South African Constitution, which says any individual or community who is dispossessed of any right in land after 1913 as a result of a racially discriminatory law or policy is entitled to equitable redress. And so that's what land restitution is, essentially.
Now, from, of course, what I have been to find out is that up to 1994, at least 87% of the prime territory in South Africa was owned by at least 10% of the minority white farmers.
That is correct, Shaka, an injustice by any measure. And what many people don't know is that now we're at just over, last year was 20 years of democracy in South Africa, and only about 10% of that land has changed hands from whites back to blacks.
Why is it that, frankly, this happens to be an indigenous African-dominated government? How come it has not delivered on its pledge, really, of 1994? Because I recall that when they came into power, they said that they had a goal that by 2014, at least a third of the land would have been distributed back to the indigenous Africans. What happened?
Well, I wrote about this. I wrote an article in Foreign Affairs where I gave my take on what happened. And I really do believe it's because the ANC is politically invulnerable but economically vulnerable. What do I mean by that? Well, if you remember when Mandela became president, he had a meeting in Philadelphia where he just talked about expropriation of the mines. And the next day, we saw a significant decline in the gold in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And so there's a sense that if the government is aggressive in expropriating land, they will be punished by international investors, et cetera. But on the other hand, their natural constituencies, of course, the Africans who voted them into power, but in fact, the ANC is politically invulnerable. Why do I say that? Because the DA, which is the kind of leading opposition party, in the last election got somewhere around 23% of the vote. They're not a real threat. Recently, the economic freedom fighters have come on the scene, but they're not a real threat to the ANC's political hold. And so you have a situation where although blacks are the kind of, they put the ANC into power, you know, the ANC is politically invulnerable, right, but economically vulnerable. So they have adopted policies that are not in the economic interest of their natural constituency.
Very interesting. Annabel, let me come to you in Livingston. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
What do you think about what Bernadette is talking about in as far as your southern neighbors are concerned, given that, of course, you do have experience being a Zimbabwean white citizen, you know, from, in fact, from that particular region?
I agree with the professor that the ANC are politically invulnerable. But, I mean, land redistribution is a pathway fraught with difficulty. You know, you witness Zimbabwe. And to me, as you know, the solution is devolving it down to private ownership of land. And in certainly in Zimbabwe's case, it's not in the interest of, you know, any of the political elite to support private ownership, because this empowers the individual, and then they lose, you know, they fear losing control.
What about the issue of willing seller, willing buyer? Do you think that that is a policy that remains relevant?
Well, I mean, if you remove the politics, yes. But because of the history of our two countries, it's rife, it's fraught with because of the inequities of the past and because of the inequalities that exist today, that, you know, the massive disparity in wealth. Willing buyer and willing seller, yes. But then, is it fair? I don't know, but it is. It still is part of private ownership, which is the way to go, I think, in order to ensure people have a say, you know, and people get land if they want it, and they can sell it if they want it, too.
Now, Annabel, the last time I checked, of course, you come from Zimbabwe. I know that both Zimbabwe and Zambia, of course, share the beautiful Victoria Falls. And yet you tell me that, in fact, you're talking to us from Livingston, which is in Zambia, which, of course, used to be Northern Rhodesia. How come you are not in your country?
I'm not allowed back into Zimbabwe as a result of my pro-democracy work that I undertook in Washington, D.C. I was banned in 2002.
Did they remove your citizenship?
I don't know. It was just the organization I ran was spoken about in the Zimbabwean parliament. My chairman at the time was declared an enemy of the state, and we were all told we were never allowed back, and I have never gone back as a result.
What happened to the farm belonging to your parents and relatives?
It was invaded in 2001 by impoverished supporters of ZANU-PF, unemployed people. They were referred to as A1 settlers, but in fact, in 2002, they were removed by the political elite. It was a military commander called Colonel Mundu, who had been involved in the Liberation War. And then the farm was looted in 2003, and my family was given 24 hours to leave the farm, with everything left on it. So they left in 2003.
I see. Well, time is not our best ally. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOALandReform. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at land reform in South Africa. The Natives Land Act of 1913 restricted black people from buying or renting land in white South Africa. In 1994, the ANC government said it wanted to return 30% of this land to its previous owners by 2014. President Jacob Zuma signs the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act in June 2014. The amendment reopens the restitution claims process and gives claimants until June 30, 2019 to lodge further claims. At least 3.5 million South Africans were forcibly removed from their land as a result of the Native Land Act of 1913. The Land Act effectively reserved 87% of the country's land for the white minority. So far, only 7.5% of this land has been returned. Many of the land reform farms have failed due to a lack of skill transference and capital to sustain the farm.
As Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th, Voice of America reporters head to the field, covering the election campaigns and the issues for Nigeria and all of Africa. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria Decides 2015. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA has the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries, counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. VOA's Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. And stay on top online. Go to voanews.com. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come back to you, Bernadette. You know as well as I do that globally, the Madiba, Nelson Mandela, former South African president, is considered by many to be perhaps the nearest thing to a social, political patron saint. Are you suggesting that there are a lot of people right there in South Africa who see him very differently because he apparently may not have at least delivered on the land issue?
Right. I think it's a challenge because, you know, with the liberation bargain, what happens in 1994 is, whites get what they get immediately, meaning that all of their title to the land, which they held, they were given free and clear title to that land. In exchange for that, blacks got land reform. The point is, right, whites got what they got immediately in 1994, and even 20 years later, blacks are still waiting for their land reform. So many people feel like that liberation bargain was unfair. But the real key is, you know, do we blame Madiba for that? Because the point is, at 1994, what were his options? Or what were the options of the ANC is a better question to ask. And did he know, or, you know, should he have known that, in fact, it was going to be so difficult to redistribute the land? And I think you always have to look at things, decisions being made in their historical context, because what we were facing in 1994, if you remember the ethnic clashes, he was trying to prevent a civil war in South Africa, which he did very successfully. But at what cost? And a lot of people are angry because it seems like it's the blacks in South Africa who are paying the cost, and that cost needs to be distributed more fairly.
You're not saying by any chance or any measure that a civil war, in fact, may very well be simply postponed.
Well, you know, this is an interesting. So Jim Gibson at the University of Washington, St. Louis, conducted one of the, my work is qualitative. He conducted one of the most robust quantitative studies done to land on to date in South Africa. He interviewed 3,700 South Africans, and he found that 85% of blacks agreed with the following statement. Land must be returned to blacks no matter what the political consequences are. Land is stolen from blacks. And then two out of every three blacks agree with the statement, land must be returned to blacks no matter what the political consequences are. So, you know, those of us who work on land in South Africa, we know this thing is a time bomb waiting to explode. And what Gibson's study does is just give us empirical confirmation for that intuition.
So what about the fact that the Madiba is known, for example, to have said that, quote, when a man has done what he considers to be his duty to his people and his country, he can rest in peace. I believe I have made that effort, and that is therefore why I will sleep for the eternity.
Absolutely. And my view is he did, you know, obviously the bargain has not turned out to the benefit of many blacks in South Africa. Obviously, political apartheid is over, but economic apartheid lives on. But Madiba did the best he could under the circumstances he was given. So I absolutely do believe that.
Why do you call it economic apartheid? Frankly, there are no laws, you know, in the books that prevent the indigenous Africans to access land.
That's right. So it's not about...
There's no Jim Crow here.
That's right. Not de jure, but de facto, right? It's a yes. Sense that when you do, again, this is one of the things that, you know, South Africa is one of the most unequal countries in the world, right, with the highest Gini coefficient. It's only rivaled by Brazil. And so this inequality that has, that, you know, still exists 20 years later, this extreme inequality is what I mean when I say economic apartheid lives on.
You also try, as a matter of fact, in your book, to equate what happened in these United States of America about 150 years ago with what is currently happening in South Africa. Is that fair? We're talking about 150 years ago when black folks were supposed to have 40 acres and a mule to boot.
I think this is not in my book, but you're referring to a New York Times op-ed that I wrote on the 150th anniversary of General Sherman's order to give every black person 150 acres and a mule. Mm-hmm. And the point I was making in that op-ed piece was just to say that, you know, South Africa is in a point, you know, although blacks never got their 50 acres and a mule, in essentially what's going in America, in South Africa, that process is occurring right now and there, and it's just pointing out the various challenges that were happening in South Africa. So even when you do get the 50 acres and a mule, right, the point was that there are still significant challenges that lay before you.
What are some of the successes for, at least for the ANC government during the last 20 years, from what you have been able to see, the sort of successes that they could actually build on?
Absolutely. Well, especially in the area of land, when I usually speak about land restitution in my book and all my presentations, I usually start with what went well. And one of the things that went extremely well with the land restitution program was access. Mm-hmm. On several counts, number one, the Land Restitution Commission provided significant support to people to formally dispossess individuals and communities who were going through the very complicated restitution program. In other countries, it was up to the dispossessed individual to build their case. In South Africa, they knew that years of Bantu education and various forms of disadvantage left these formerly evicted people in a very vulnerable position, so they gave them help to go through the process. In most other countries that have restitution, you're required to produce a deed. In South Africa, the amount of evidence they allowed in to allow people to prove, I was once there. I was once a member of that dismembered community. It's truly astonishing. They were allowed to bring in oral testimony, baptismal records, farm records, aerial maps. I mean, the list went on and on in terms of what people could use to prove they were there. And of course, last but not least, that gives tremendous access, is of June of last year, President Jacob Zuma reopened the land claims process. Because initially the deadline was December 31st, 1998. And at that point, just under 80,000 people filed claims, which is abysmal. Why? Because There were many laws used to dispossess blacks. One of those many laws is called the Group Areas Act, and it's estimated by that one act alone, 3.5 million people were dispossessed. And the fact is only about 80,000 people filed claims by the deadline. And so millions of people were excluded from their constitutional right to restitution. And so this reopening that happens in June fixes that. So that's one of the great successes of land reform and land restitution, more specifically, is the tremendous amount of access. I think that's a story that needs to be told.
Annabelle, let's go back to Zimbabwe, the land, of course, that at one time was known as Rhodesia, after the name of Sir John Cecil Rhodes. I remember many, many years ago interviewing Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe, and he told me that, for example, the 2000 referendum, among other things, was meant to bring about, frankly, a reasonable land reform. Those were his words. He said that there were a lot of land that was fallow, really, but that the white commercial farmers who were in the neighborhood, according to him, of 4,500, were not willing to let go the land that, in fact, was not being developed. What do you think he should have done under the circumstances?
There is absolutely no doubt that, as I've said before, that there are inequities and inequalities in the land distribution in Zimbabwe. But it was never, yes, and the Commercial Farmers Union in Zimbabwe certainly made many, many mistakes. But, you know, the thing is, it boils down to, again, is that, you know, you have to empower the individual. And if you don't, you know, the one thing that is just the elephant in the room in this conversation is that there's no mention of corruption. And if you don't empower the individual, the whole society, you are opening the whole society to corruption, and you create a command economy. And that is what has happened in Zimbabwe. There is no desire for Japan to start any form of creation of private ownership of land, of even the black population. And therein lies its biggest problem.
If he was, if President Mugabe was watching Straight Talk Africa right now, or listening to it via radio or surfing it on the internet, what would you say to him?
Well, first of all, I'd ask him why his wife owns so many farms, because she really does own many, many farms in Zimbabwe and has taken them under the auspices of this redistribution. The other thing I would ask him is, how is it that farmers that have been protected by certain elements in his party, who have now fallen foul of his wife and him, are all losing their farms now because the people who they were being looked after by have fallen foul, so they've lost their influence. None of this is a reflection of any form of land distribution. It's more like feudalism.
I'm sure that you know as well as I do that there were what some would call colonial injustices that obviously affected the vast majority of the indigenous Zimbabweans. If you had any solutions in 30 seconds, what do you think the government in Harare should have done in order to rectify the situation?
Well, the redress is a pathway that is fraught with difficulties. I mean, there is just no two ways about it. And, ultimately, economics, I believe, will dictate what happens to the land in the future, whether it is in South Africa, whether it is in Zimbabwe. But to be sure, if there is no tenure, then there is no bank that is going to lend money for improvements. There are no loans. There is, if you are reliant on state funding, as you have seen what has happened within Zimbabwe in the last 10 to 12 years, they cannot meet deadlines because there is no money, so then they don't get their seed at the right time, so then they don't grow a crop that is going to feed them or to be sold. And unless the only reason small-scale farmers have managed to grow any crops is with the support of outside corporations coming in to help them grow their, you know, to grow their tobacco or to grow their crops. And the government has run all of that, basically.
I see. Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Petrida Paul from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, writes, Africa's land reform policies are effective, but adhering to the rules depends on the country. For example, in Kenya, the land is by scramble, with the citizens being inclusive. But in Tanzania, where vast tracts of land are available, land is abundant for the white minority. I believe that government corruption also allows land redistribution to be equitable for white minority farmers, unlike black Africans.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, Shaka, many political and economic analysts blame Zimbabwe's economic decline on the land reform policies of President Robert Mugabe. His government has confiscated and redistributed white-owned commercial farmland without offering any compensation. In South Africa, whites owned about 87% of the country's total land, although they constituted just over 10% of the population. 2 decades after apartheid, only about 7.5% of this land has been returned. This leads us to our question of the week, asking, how effective are Africa's current land reform policies as a way to redistribute land equitably from white minority farmers to indigenous Africans? Well, thanks for using all our social media platforms to tell us what you think. Let's begin with a comment from Patricia Namdi in Kampala, Uganda, who writes, the issue regarding land is paramount to many Africans. In South Africa and Zimbabwe, many blacks lost their land to the whites. In South Africa, the apartheid regime grabbed 87% of land and pushed black Africans into the Bantustan. The only land policy that can help blacks in South Africa is the one that allows for the return of the land to its rightful owners. It's unfair for the minority whites to own most land when Africans are suffering. Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Land Reform. And if you haven't yet, please, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Ahmed Ibrahim, who writes, most land reform leads to a new form of internal crisis like unemployment and tensions which most regimes are not prepared for. And he goes on to say that similarly, the new landowners neglect or resell them to the whites. And a new regime will want to reclaim it in a new land reform. Very interesting comments, Shaka. And guess what do you guys make of it?
Very interesting. Bernadette, how do you react to that?
Well, in South Africa, this issue of reselling is just not the case because the government actually puts controls on that. And once you receive land through land reform, you're not allowed to sell it to anyone for 10 years. So the last comment just wasn't correct in the context of South Africa. But, you know, the other people are talking about, you know, it's just an injustice. The first woman was saying it's an injustice, this land inequality. And there just can be no question about that. It is absolutely an injustice. But the real question is not whether the land needs to be redistributed. It's about how to redistribute the land. And that's where the tension lies.
I see. Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, we'll move on to a posting from Okugbo Omunua Igodalo from Abuja in Nigeria, who writes, Africa's current land reform policies to redistribute land to the indigenous African population cannot be termed effective. Most indigenous Africans still cannot easily access land for a decent settlement and agricultural purposes. Statistics show that the productivity of indigenous Africans is significantly less than optimum, in spite of the land reform policies. And while we're at it, let's take a look at another comment, another Facebook comment, this time from Martin Joseph in Mwanza, Tanzania, who says that in her country, the land reform policies seem to favor the so-called investors, leading to constant land conflict with the residents. Shaka and guests.
Interesting. Interesting. Annabella, what about you? How do you react to that?
Well, I mean, I think that's very much the case in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly in places where land is allowed to be subdivided and where people have right of title, you know, to the ability to trade their land. I mean, that is, after all, capitalism. And so, you know, as long as they are compensated for their land and they manage and they can keep their dignity, you know, you can't, you know, these actions are, you know, willing buyer, willing seller. But, you know, if you take it without any of these things, then it be, you know, as it happened in the colonial days, as it happened in Zimbabwe in the last 12 years, you know, there isn't, then it isn't equitable. And so, but, you know, if private ownership of land, I think, is paramount to people being able to, you know, in order for land to be redistributed.
Thank you very much. And thanks, of course, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Thanks to our guests for weighing into our audience's comments. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on this program, Nigeria's postponed presidential and parliamentary elections are set for March 28th. We'll have a final preview of ballot next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and we are talking about land reform policies in Africa and the need to address the historical colonial and apartheid inequities in ownership. Our distinguished guests are Bernadette Atuwahen, a law professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Chicago Kent College of Law. She is the author of a new book entitled We Want What's Ours, Learning from South Africa's Land Restitution Program. She also directed and produced a short documentary film, Sifuna Okwetu, which complements her book. It focuses on a South African family's struggle to regain their land. And Annabel Hughes, the former executive director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Trust, a nonpartisan pro-democracy group set up to campaign internationally for the rights of the Zimbabweans. She joins us via telephone link up from Livingston in Zambia. Well, I have to say, Annabel, of course, and Bernadette, once again, I have to say, profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, it's
It's an honor to be here.
You're most welcome. I gather I have to go You're most welcome, Annabelle. Let me go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Patrick, are you there? Patrick.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
Good evening.
How are you?
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Shaka.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, I want to find out from Professor. Professor, you see, in our economic theory, we were told that land is a free gift of the nature. Now, in as much as land is a free gift of the nature, Professor, if you go now to see, you see that during farming period, you see people fighting because of land. And government, a little thing will happen, government will confiscate the land. Why is it so in Africa that we normally have problem of land, where the economic theory we have, as we all know, said land is a free gift of nature. And even though you collect the certificate of occupancy, the government will tell you that everything that has to do with land belongs to government, that they can revoke the certificate of occupancy. Why is it so every day, day in, day out? Thank you.
What about that, Bernadette?
Yeah, so he's saying that land belongs to us all.
Yes.
There's two things going on there. Number one, he's really at the heart of his comment making a critique about government control of land, right? And the government using land as a form of patronage, as a form of control over people. And that's one of the benefits of actual private ownership. Because when the land is owned privately, then in fact government no longer has it. Land then serves as a zone of autonomy, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain things I can do when I privately own land that I can't do in public spaces. In my privately owned land, I can redecorate. I can't go redecorate a park. Mm-hmm. I can walk around naked in my house. I can't walk around naked outside, right? When you do have private property, it forms a zone of autonomy. And that's exactly the problem when you have, you lack private property, and government then can use that land to control people. And that's precisely, I'd love to hear what Annabelle thinks about this, but that's precisely what we saw in Operation Drive Out Trash in Zimbabwe, where the squatters were on the land. Just before the election, he clears those squatters, and that's precisely what happens, because those squatters didn't have rights to the land, and so they were vulnerable politically, and the government can remove them when they want to remove them. So that's all part of the, that's all part of a very important dynamic.
But what about in a situation like South Africa? We're talking about South Africa, we're talking about Zimbabwe, we could talk about Namibia, we could even talk about Kenya for that matter.
Yeah.
A situation, frankly, where there is inequitable distribution or inequitable access to land. What would then be the role of the government of the day?
Right, and that, without a doubt, that role is to redistribute the land. But I also want us to not, without a question, but I also want us to go one step deeper, because one of the things I argue is we need to move away from this idea of reparations towards a more robust idea that I'm calling dignity restoration.
Right.
And that's the process, not only giving people compensation for things that was stolen from them, but doing it through a process that affirms their humanity and includes them as full and equal members of the polity. So that means in land reform, it's just not about giving people land. It's about the process that you use to give them land is also very important, and that's an opportunity to kind of restore dignity that has been degraded throughout the years. So I have lots of data in my book that shows that when the process was actually fair, transparent, and equitable in South Africa, people received, although they received some of them financial compensation, some the land back, but they always felt, that it was a fair process, that, it was dignity restorative. But in other instances, when the government failed to return people's calls, scheduling meetings with them and not pitching up, right? When they failed to respect people, demonstrate respect through the process. In fact, this land reform that was made to heal the wounds of the past, in fact, salted those wounds many times. So I want us to move our focus from just giving people things to how we give people those things to process is also something we need to put on the table.
Very, very interesting. We have to go for a break. And, of course, when we come back, we shall continue with our discussion. In order to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
Take a look at land reform in Zimbabwe. The 1979 Lancaster House Agreement marked the start of Zimbabwe's modern move to distribute land more equitably between disenfranchised blacks and the minority whites who had ruled the country. In 2000, under the fast-track process of land redistribution, Zimbabwe's government confiscated commercial farms without offering compensation. In November 2002, the government seized 35 million acres of land from white farmers. The aim of the program was to take land from rich white commercial farmers for redistribution to poor and middle-income landless black Zimbabweans. Zimbabwe suffered a poor harvest in 2004, and it was partially blamed on the land reform program.
Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th for a landmark election. What happens there matters throughout Africa. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. VOA reporters are in Nigeria and surrounding countries covering the campaigns and the issues and counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizui. Let's go, of course, to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And this time, Bernadette, we are going to the Republic of Ghana. Good evening, Tafa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And I am honored to be in the studios here in Washington with one of your sisters from Kumasi.
Thank you. Good evening.
I am hugely terrific. How are you today?
I'm good, Saka. I'm good. Mm-hmm. And I got your guest in the studio.
So what is your question?
I have only one question to ask our guest. Regarding the South African issue, we all knew that this land was took without any compensation to the original owners who are black South Africans. Now, the only minority who own the land also are citizens of South Africa. So now, the question is that, my guest, don't you think it's very important that the government of South Africa should buy the land from the minority and distribute it to the poor, those who cannot afford to buy the land?
Thank you.
Because we cannot go the way Zimbabwe goes. Because Zimbabwe, we all see what happened there. And we don't want South Africa also to go in that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Saka.
You're most welcome. It's a very interesting question. The government should buy the land and distribute it to people who actually need it. We had that same scheme, by the way, in Zimbabwe. It was a scheme. There was a fund during the administration of Margaret Thatcher in Britain and John Major. But in 1996, I think, when you had Mr. Tony Blair coming into office, everything changed, correct?
In Zimbabwe?
Yes.
Well, Britain at the Lancaster House Agreement in 1979, right, pledged significant sums because from 1980, the first 10 years, from 1980 to 1990, Zimbabweans weren't allowed to do anything but willing seller, willing buyer. And in fact, not only that, but they had to pay the people in foreign currency, which was, a non-starter. And it was only since 1990 were they able to move away from the willing seller, willing buyer. But the point is, during Lancaster House Agreement, it was the British who were supposed to contribute some money, right, to help them to pay the white farmers off. And in fact, the British did give one tranche of money. I think it was maybe 30% of what they were supposed to give. Mm-hmm. But they claimed due to corruption, they didn't give any more money after that initial 30%. So
you also remember, I'm sure, the situation of Kenya. Mm-hmm. In the 1950s, you had this liberation group called Mau Mau. Mm-hmm. Kiswahili, by the way, acronym meaning Muzungu Akirudi Ulaya, Mwafrika Atapata Uhuru. If the European goes back to Europe, the African will be free. Mm-hmm. They also went to Lancaster House. They also got a deal. And the money was dispersed to buy the land of the white commercial farmers in Kenya. But I can assure you that the people who took the land were no different, frankly, than the minority who owned it previously. The majority of the people up to now, they want some land. Right. Why is it that people fight for land, a piece of land, and when they take power, they begin shifting goalposts? Mm. They begin behaving as if, in fact, they were insensitive to the people they claim to have been fighting for.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tough question in terms of why the goalposts are shifting. But one of the things, and especially in response to our caller from Ghana, you know, this idea that why don't we just give the, you know, give the land to the poor people who need it. Mm. Again, in land redistribution, that's one of the goals, right? Land restitution is about giving it the land to people based on whether you owned it or not in the past. But land redistribution is supposed to do exactly that, giving land based on need. Mm. And the real question is not, you know, why don't we do it, but how do we make the existing land restitution programs all over Southern Africa work more effectively? But that's exactly what is going on in these redistribution programs.
Very interesting. Let's go to the other side of the continent, which is East Africa. Good evening, Charles from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Charles, can you hear me? Well, I'm afraid it looks like Charles is not hearing me. What about you, Annabelle? Do you have some comments in the meantime, please?
Well, in regard to that, with regards to redistribution, I mean, I do believe that there should be, you know, land should be able to be subdivided. And in Zimbabwe, it's an extremely difficult, it's almost impossible to subdivide land, you know, into viable units so that people can, you know, manage them and not these huge tracts of land that prove to be unmanageable. Mm-hmm. And I think that it has to be done within a framework of the rule of law and with definite transparency. We met a Rwandan last weekend here who was telling us how there is a central registration office within, you know, for every single landowner to go to where they can register their land, where everyone can see it, they can see the title. So there isn't any form of, you know, there isn't too much worry about corruption and sort of keeping everything behind the scenes. It's all open for everybody to see.
I see. Let's go once again to the lifeline of the show. Good evening, Charles from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm afraid I gather that he's not there. Let me come immediately back to you, Bernadette. You obviously heard what Annabelle had to say among other things. Mm-hmm. She actually uses the key word rule of law. You have actually been talking variously about land storing, correct?
About
land being stored.
Yes, absolutely.
From the indigenous people.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
When someone actually accesses or repossesses or possesses land belonging to someone else, mm-hmm. and because they have power, they put in place a mechanism mm-hmm. of law that protects them, do they still remain thieves? You are a trained lawyer from one of the best law schools on this globe.
Yeah, so the point is, this land was no doubt stolen, right? Mm-hmm. But that theft was made legal, right?
Yes,
during apartheid. It was stolen by the apartheid government and given to various individuals, sometime at below market prices, sometimes not.
Right.
And so the real question is then, well, over the years, you know, the land was stolen, but there have been many investments made on that stolen land, right? And so the story then becomes more complicated. So the point is, one of the great compromises that I think was brilliant is in Section 25 of the South African Constitution, they make provision for this, for this idea that the land is stolen. So what's supposed to happen is, if I take back the land from a white farmer, I'm supposed to pay just compensation. But that just compensation, the starting point only, is the fair market value. And then you're supposed to deduct for certain things that are enumerated in the Constitution. Like, number one, the amount of money you paid for the land. So, in fact, if you got the land at below market rates, we count that. The other thing that you subtract for is subsidies that you may have received during colonialism or apartheid. You're supposed to subtract for that. And so if when Section 25 works like it's supposed to work, the amount of compensation that farmers are actually paid reflects the privileges that they received in the past. Okay, that's ideal. But the point is, it doesn't work like that, right?
I see.
And so one of the things I actually found in my research is that those deductions that are clearly enumerated in Section 25 of the Constitution are not occurring. Why are they not occurring? How do I know that? Because I looked through the files, and the research has not even been done as to how much was originally paid for the land, how much was received in subsidies. So the basic research is not being done. Then how can you subtract from the price that you're paying? And so what the government in South Africa is actually paying is the fair market value or something close to that, when in fact that's not part of the bargain, right? That's no longer fair, considering all these issues of theft and prior advantages.
Very, very briefly, talk to us about the plight of the Majolas, who you referred to as the Majolas during your research, a black family that had owned property in Sophiatown near Johannesburg.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. So one of the
families...
They
just got peanuts.
Yes, good. That's it. Yeah, so this is one of the families I interviewed in the book. And in South Africa, when you got compensation, you were either supposed to get your land if it was available, alternative land if it wasn't, or financial compensation. The problem with the financial compensation is it was something called an SSO, a standard settlement offer. And that standard settlement offer ranged anywhere between 20,000 rand and 60,000 rand, divide by 10 approximately to get to dollars,
Jeez.
U.S. dollars. So it was nothing that they were given. The problem with that is... So people were given nothing, and I hope in round two that SSO number really increases. But what really adds insult to injury is that when I take a piece of land from a current owner, right, that owner is paid some market-related value. But when the land was taken from past owners, who are mostly black, they get symbolic compensation that is clearly, you know, that is readily acknowledged to not have any relation to the market value of the property rights that were lost.
It's
so you have a situation
no
where white owners are getting fair market market-related compensation,
but
and black owners are getting symbolic compensation. It can't be.
The value is less. Finally, in 10 seconds, how can one access your book and the documentary?
You can find everything is on our website, wewantwhatsours.com, which is the title of the book. So if you go to wewantwhatsours.com, you can find the film, you can find a free excerpt of the book, you can find everything is on our website, wewantwhatsours.com.
Very interesting. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Bernadette Atuwahen, law professor at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Chicago Kent College of Law, and documentary filmmaker and author of We Want What's Ours, Learning from South Africa's Land Restitution Program, and Annabelle Hughes, the former executive director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Trust, who joined us via a telephone link-up from a Zambian city known as Livingstone. And thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning, Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.